We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Let me begin by the other week. And I think it caused a bit of confusion, and maybe you can clear that up. The FDA head said something along the lines of, you know, sooner or later, everyone is going to get the Omicron variant. And that left a lot of people scratching their heads thinking, well, vaccinated or not, boosted or not, I'm going to get sick with COVID. That is not what was meant, was it?
No, that absolutely is not what it's meant. And the operative word that you just mentioned is getting sick. And what I believe it was Janet Woodcock, the acting commissioner of the FDA, said that at a hearing, what she was referring to is that Omicron is such a highly transmissible virus that it will essentially be exposed to virtually everybody because of its ability to transmit from person to person. What will happen is that everyone likely will be exposed to it, and maybe everyone will get, quote, infected. But infected doesn't mean you get symptoms, and infected doesn't mean that you get sick. We know very, very clearly from good data with Delta, and there's no reason to believe it's going to be any different with Omicron, that when you look at the people who are unvaccinated versus those who are vaccinated, the likelihood of getting infected, of requiring hospitalization, or of dying is much, much, much higher in an unvaccinated person than a vaccinated person, particularly a vaccinated person who's boosted. So what she was referring to is that maybe we're going to get exposed and many, many, many of us will get infected even if we're vaccinated, but vaccination will protect you for the most part against getting seriously ill.
Let's talk about the idea of this being mild, because mild can mean different things. And when we talk about, you know, exposure versus everybody's going to get it, people can get the idea, and some have, that, hey, you know what, I'll get this thing, I'll get it over with, it's going to be fine because we're all going to get it anyways. But mild to me means, you know, oh, a few days at home, sore throat, whatever. Mild to doctors can mean the worst flu of your life, but you don't have to go to the ER, right? So it can still be really, really bad.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I'm glad you brought that question up because it really is the source of some confusion. If you look on a case-by-case basis in an otherwise normal population, there is no doubt that Omicron is less severe with regard to a requirement for hospitalization, for the duration of the stay in the hospital, for the requirement for mechanical ventilation. However, when you get so many people infected because it's so much of a highly transmissible virus, that you are going to get a proportion of those individuals who are going to get seriously ill. It will be much more weighted to the elderly and for those with underlying conditions. So you don't want people to feel that just because in general, Omicron may be inherently less severe than Delta, that everybody's going to be just fine with Omicron. That's not the case. You're going to see people who are hospitalized, and they're going to be people who die. And that's the reason why we say the good news is that on a population level, it's less severe. But you still need to protect yourself because you don't know. I mean, there are so many people with high risk factors. For example, the elderly. I mean, I am an elderly individual. By the years, the number of years, I'm relatively healthy, but on the basis of my age alone, I'm at a much higher risk of a severe outcome. People with obesity, with diabetes, with heart disease, all of those people are a greater risk. So we don't want to be complacent. We want to accept gladly that Omicron is less severe in general, but we can't be overly complacent about it.
Let me turn a bit to these antiviral pills that have now been approved, both the Merck one and the Pfizer one. And we've had people on the show who have said, experts who have said, well, these are going to be real game changers as much as the vaccines have been. And yet I've also heard from doctors, and we've had those doctors on the show, who have said, yeah, but you know, you can barely get these. The production is lagging way behind the demand. Other doctors have told us that there's a fairly high profile in terms of cross-reaction with other meds, so you got to be really careful how you take this stuff. Some people are under the impression, or were, that these are the kind of pills where you feel like you have COVID, you get tested, you're positive for COVID, you run to the pharmacy, you pop a few pills, and you're good as gold. That's not really the way they're going to work, is it?
Well, that's not the reality of where we are now with the pills. First of all, let me just make a couple of factual statements that people need to understand. It is always, always better to prevent an infection than to get infected and having to treat the infection, because no treatment is 100% effective. That's for sure. So the best thing to do is prevent the infection. If you are infected, we now have some very good drugs that, if given earlier enough in the course of the infection, can go a long way to preventing you from progressing to severe disease leading to hospitalizations and deaths. For example, Paxlovid, the drug by Pfizer, diminishes the likelihood of you going to be hospitalized or dying by about 89 to 90% if given very early in the first 3 to 5 days. You have a monoclonal antibody, sotrovimab, which is a monoclonal antibody that, again, if given early on, has a high degree of protection. The drug remdesivir, which requires an intravenous infusion, is also highly effective. Less effective is molnupiravir, the Merck drug, which is only about 30% effective. So there are good drugs, several of which are now shown to be effective. You're right. Currently, the supply of drugs does not meet a demand for it, but the federal government has contracted with the companies to markedly increase the availability, for example, of Paxlovid, to double the original contract for 10 million treatment courses, to double that to 20 million treatment courses. So we recognize that there is a supply-demand issue, but hopefully over a reasonable period of time, that will be corrected.
But there's more than just a supply and demand issue. You mentioned it in passing about there's this small window, right, of 3 to 5 days, I guess, depending on the med, where these pills are going to be truly effective. And yet, as you know, going on now the third year of this pandemic, it is still really difficult in many parts of the country to get rapid tests. It's difficult to do a whole bunch of things that would allow somebody who is positive for COVID to A, find out that they're positive to begin with, and then be able to get access to these pills. I mean, that's a problem.
Yes, there's no doubt you can't walk away from things that in the real world are problems, but you do the best you can, and you try to improve on that and mitigate the effects of the problem. So how do you do that? Well, first of all, as you know, most recently, that the administration is giving out a half a billion tests that are free to individuals, soon followed by another half a billion for a total of a billion tests. One can now get tests at 20,000 testing centers, as well as distribution in different pharmacies, there has now been initiated an online capability of ordering tests to be delivered to your own home. So although that wasn't available a couple of months ago, right now, it makes it much easier. For example, if I had symptoms today, that I could get my hands on a rapid test. And if in fact it was positive, within the next day or so, I could be on antiviral drugs, such as Paxlovid or one of the others that could have a very favorable effect. So we're moving rapidly towards a greater availability of tests, particularly point of care tests, and with that, the opportunity to move ahead with treatment for an early infection.
The vaccine makers are talking about Omicron-specific vaccines. They say maybe springtime, maybe March, and then the criticism is, well, too little, too late. We would need them now. Where is the place in the world for the Omicron-specific vaccine? How does that end up getting used?
Well, I'm not so sure that we actually will need an Omicron-specific vaccine. We are developing one just in case we do need it. But one thing we do know, that the original vaccine was made against the ancestral Wuhan strain. And yet when we had Alpha and Beta and Delta and now Omicron, boosting after proper vaccination provides quite good protection. So although we may ultimately need to go on to a Omicron-specific boost, it may not be necessary. We're working for a more universal coronavirus vaccine. In other words, one that doesn't chase after each and every variant, but that provides protection against the common elements of virtually all the variants. That's where the research and the effort is being put into right now.
So a pan variant vaccine, right? That would cover all your bases. Was the reason why that wasn't initially developed because in the middle of a crisis, it was easier to go after the spike protein?
No, not at all. First of all, you had to go after the virus you were dealing with. That just makes sense. It's much easier and much quicker. And as you probably know, the development of a vaccine was in an unprecedented record period of time, which has already saved literally hundreds of millions of lives already with the vaccine. That was the first step. The development of a universal coronavirus vaccine still needs to get over some scientific hurdles as opposed to just developmental hurdles.
Talk to the "this is never ending" crowd, because I heard an interview the other day with somebody, and they were at the airport and they were going to get on their plane, and the soundbite was from this woman saying, "You know what? I'm going to put on my mask, and I just know that I'm never ever not going to have to wear a mask at the airport again. This is going to happen for the rest of my life." We know all the different scenarios. We've talked about endemicity. We've talked about other variants that could pop up. But I mean, really, are we going to have to be wearing masks at the airport for the rest of our lives?
No. The answer to that is clear. And the answer is no, that this is not going to last forever. I think there will be circumstances during mini outbreaks, like maybe in the influenza season, where people will elect to wear masks. I think people realize now something that we never realized, but that many countries, particularly in Asia, realize, that well beyond and well before COVID-19, there were many people in foreign countries, Japan, China, Korea, and places like that, that during the winter season, when there were respiratory diseases going around, they would voluntarily wear a mask. It wasn't mandated, but they would voluntarily do that. That could be the case sometime with us, but I don't think we are going to be wearing masks for the rest of our lives. I think that is an over-exaggeration.
We had you on in the very beginning of the pandemic, and one of us asked you at the time about whether we will be prepared for the next one. And I remember your answer was along the lines of, let's get through this one first. And fair enough. But now that we're going into the third year of this, are there things that we have learned, that you have learned from this experience, that does prepare us better for what will inevitably be at some point another pandemic?
Yeah, we've learned some lessons that are productive lessons, and we've learned some very chilling lessons. We've learned that the science that got us to be able to develop a vaccine so rapidly, in unprecedented speed, less than a year from the time of the identification of the virus to the time you're putting a highly effective and safe vaccine into the arms of individuals. We've learned that we need global cooperation and collaboration and solidarity, since global pandemics require a global response. The other thing that we've learned, that we've got to make sure that we keep political divisiveness out of our response to the outbreak, because one of the greatest impediments to a comprehensive response is when public health principles are severely influenced by ideology and political persuasion. The common enemy is the virus, not each other. And if we want to effectively get through a pandemic, we've got to all be on the same team, pulling together and implementing sound, readily, universally acceptable public health principles, and not violating that by things like misinformation about vaccines and misinformation about masking. That does nothing but hinder our response.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.